The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other
thing. One more
thing. We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the last Tuesday evening Space Show of the year 2011. Time has really gone fast. It always goes fast when you're having such a grand old time, right? And space is so much fun these days. It's just gone by lickety-split. And we're going to do a year in review with our favorite year in reviewer, Tom Olson. But let me run through the announcements first. You can call us. Actually, you can call Tom at 1-866-687-7223. Remember, there are no call screeners. Let it ring until we can answer it, and we'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. You can also email us at drspace@thespaceshow.com. Do remember that we're copyrighted and trademarked, but you have permission to download these shows. They are in the MP3 format. You can copy them, put them on a DVD, a CD, a memory stick, and you can share them. The only restrictions are nothing commercial, and do not edit the shows, no private YouTube channels or anything like that. And there are you're not supposed to do written transcripts, even if it's for your own personal use. Now, that said, if you have any special requests on what you want to do with a Space Show program, please do email me, and let's see what we can work out. In addition, you can email us. You know, our email for tonight, we have 3 email addresses, but only one of them is up and running tonight unless we need the others. drspace@thespaceshow.com. And then remember, we also podcast, and we thank Gigadial and Andrew for our podcasting. Actually, we thank Tom Olson, our guest tonight, for our podcasting, because way back when, in the prehistoric years before podcasting, Tom brought it to my attention and got me to take it seriously. And it was at a Space Access Society conference that Tom was there and I was there. And Mitch Clapp, I was talking to him, and I'm trying to get him on the show, by the way. And I mentioned podcasting, and he told me there was a really good free podcasting service that he recommended, and he introduced me to Gigadial. And so Tom was the root of all of our podcasting evils. And we were not ahead of our time, but we were pretty close to being early adopters. So we thank Tom for that. In addition, remember that we're partially sponsored by and brought to you by the Secure World Foundation, which works for secure, sustainable, and peaceful uses of outer space. And they contribute to global stability here on Earth with all of the work, research, and programming they do to further space development. For more information about Secure World, you do need to visit their website. It's an excellent website. Go to www.secureworldfoundation.org. And then you can also visit our website, which is thespaceshow.com. And remember, our newsletter is there in detail, and you can get the coming attractions. You get all of the guest bios. And if we have to make special announcements, we do it here first. And it's also the only place you'll find the future events listed. You can also subscribe to our very short email newsletter, and it's not going to clutter up your email box, 1 or 2 lines about the week's programming. And if you want that, please do send your request to drspace@thespaceshow.com. We have a store at the top of our website. You'll see it listed as Space Show Gear. And again, we are a nonprofit 501c3 with One Giant Leap Foundation. and you'll see the Support the Space Show button on our site. And remember, we only exist because many of you are very generous and you do support us, and we thank you very much for that. We're finishing up our annual 2011 campaign, and in every show that we archive, you'll find the link to our campaign appeal letter, which is on our website as well as on the blog. And if you want a tax deduction for this year or just want to support the Space Show, please do use PayPal, or you can send a check. And I promise you, your support is needed. It's very much appreciated. And remember, you get a federal government tax deduction. We are a 501c3, but you have to be paying U.S. taxes to do that. And if you pay California taxes, you also get a state of California tax deduction as well. So it is a pleasure to bring back Tom Olson to the program. He's been on the Space Show many, many times since the Space Show began almost 11 years ago. He's been a business systems engineer and analyst in communications, aerospace, and publishing. In addition, he has worked in investment analysis and in the operations capacity in the financial services area with cash and fund management. He's a serial entrepreneur. He helped found the Exodus Group as a way to bridge the gap of understanding between entrepreneurial space tech startups and angel seeking investors looking at new different opportunities. He's published. He's written a lot of papers and articles on space business, space finance, markets, things like that. And he is very active in various segments of the new space and other parts of the space industry. He makes excellent business presentations, if you've ever seen him do it at ISDC. And if not, you should go when he's speaking, because you will not regret it. He is an excellent speaker with excellent content. Tom, welcome back to the show. How are you?
David, it's been way too long. Glad to be here.
We're almost at the end of 2011. It's been, in my opinion, a turbulent year. How do you see it?
Exactly right. There's been, we're going to go over some things this evening. We've had some interesting highlights, a lot of challenges, some disappointments. A lot of things happened this year, some stuff in the private commercial sector, both good and not so good. There's some policy areas and some basic dysfunction sometimes in our public sector as much as anything else. One thing was an interesting thing to celebrate. I'll start that out right up front. We started the year with the 50th anniversary of human spaceflight. Now, April 12th, we celebrated 50 years of human spaceflight with Yuri Gagarin flight, of course. And, of course, for many years now, a lot of people have gotten together independently, and they do a party called Yuri's Night. And this year, I think they broke records. There were at least 567 planned events in cities in 75 countries on 7 continents. And they all have a big celebration all at once. And I attended the one in New York. I know you've attended them in the past. And it was quite a lot of fun.
How many people were at your event in New York?
Oh, a couple of hundred, probably, that I noticed.
Was it fun?
It was a gas. Yeah, there's a lot of great people. And a lot of, I mean, there's a few of the usual suspects from the local space crowd, but there's a lot of people, hundreds I've never met before, that just come for the fun. And everybody dresses up, and it's...
Where do they have it in New York?
Various clubs.
At Mars 2012?
I don't think they've done that one yet, but they're considering it for next year.
I mean, that's pretty upscale from what I understand.
Yeah, it is.
I mean,
I've been there in about 10 years myself. So.
If they're willing to bounce Shaq out of it because he's not wearing a coat and tie, it's got to be pretty upscale, if you ask me.
That should be. But one thing to note also, and the reason I brought this up, is that in 50 years of human spaceflight, barely 500 people or so have actually flown in space. And that's something that's still worthy of a policy discussion. I think you and I both would have figured that by now we could have added a couple of zeros to that number.
We could have at least, one would not have expected when we were kids growing up and we were going to the moon and all this was happening, none of us would have expected that in 50 years only 500 or so people would have gone to space.
I know when we were kids, well, I was a kid during that time. You were a little older than I was. But
no, we thought we'd be on Mars by now. We thought space would be as routine as driving to Los Angeles from where
that's
I live.
Right, orbiting hotels, you know, a city on the moon, and a small settlement on Mars probably by now.
Absolutely. What went wrong?
And, you know, and in that light, I mean, there was something else that happened a couple weeks ago. We'll talk about it more later, but I noticed Elon Musk did a speech from the National Press Club saying that we could still make it to Mars in 20 years and on a budget of maybe $5 billion.
Yeah, and he did an interview on for New Scientist with Greg Clark.
Greg Clark.
Yeah, and we talked about that a lot on my open line show last night.
Yeah.
The callers that called in were pretty skeptical.
Well, I read the piece too, and I was going to just mention. I thought it was kind of ironic that 15 years ago, a guy named Zubrin published a book that said pretty much the same thing. We could make it to Mars in 20 years on not a whole lot of money, more than $5 billion, but not a whole lot more than that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So he wrote that 15 years ago. So it's still 15 years, nothing's happened. Now Elon's saying it again for another 20 years. So even if he turns out to be right, it means we will have been waiting 35 years.
Well, I hope he pulls it off, because I don't think the government's going to pull it off.
Not in the shape they're in now.
But and who knows how long we're going to be in this or worse shape. As you like to say, we may be circling the drain, right?
Well, that's a separate topic, but we'll get to that.
Okay, you know, Musk is a big thinker, and he may do it, and I wish him well, and I hope he does it, and I'd be the biggest cheerleader ever if he could pull it off.
Absolutely. I'm not afraid of that at all.
But I, you know, when those early years, we would meet at the Mars Society conferences. They were mostly held in Boulder, although one was in Portland. And, you know, we were cheering right along for, you know, Mars on the Cheap with Bob. And there were 500 to 800 people at those conferences back then, 900 people, really enthusiastic college kids from campuses all over the country, in Canada and Europe and Australia. And then it sort of whacked out a little bit, and nothing happened. And, you know, I guess the people went to wherever they went.
Yeah. Well, there's probably some other reasons for that as well. But
those were great, inspiring conferences back when.
They were a lot of fun. That's where I first cut my teeth presenting, was at those...
at the Mars conferences.
Yeah. That's where I first really learned how to do it. But some of the highlights I've seen this year, first thing it started out this year was literally the sky has been falling. It wasn't, they had some rather large defunct satellites augured in this year, and their sizes were measured in, you know, multi-tons. But they both fell over the ocean, and that was okay. We had some Russian failures this year as well. We're going to talk about that later when we start getting into like policy section. I just want to touch on some highlights. Obviously, end of an era for the space shuttle, and that's a huge, huge thing. And also heightened the arguments about what to do next.
And probably heightened the dysfunction about what to do next, too.
Absolutely, yeah, as we've seen this year, certainly. But there's a space first, but in contrast, one of our international competitors, there's a big space first with China this year. And November 2nd, they successfully docked two robotic spacecraft in LEO. And that was designed to test some key technologies so they can build a space station in orbit. And so they hope to have a big space station themselves, independent from the ISS, up and running by 2020.
And another thing about China is they this year surpassed the United States as the number two launching country in the world.
They did.
I don't know if we should hang the flags out on that one, but we're now number three.
Yeah.
I guess we should try harder, right?
Right. But in other ways, even though we've temporarily lost our human spaceflight capability with the retirement of the shuttle, ironically, NASA still had a pretty good year. They launched three different planetary missions. They had a probe rendezvous with the asteroid Vesta. There was a comet flyby. And the big news the last few weeks, the Kepler Space Telescope discovered a lot more
Earth-like planets.
Earth-like alien planets circling other stars, some of which, at least four of which, might even be close to Earth's size.
I want to go.
And at least two of them are kind of in the green zone.
Yeah, I want to go.
Yeah.
I want to go. They got to have a better political system and less regulations than we have.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
They got that going. To date, the Kepler Space Telescope discovered more than 2,000 potential alien planets.
What an amazing instrument, isn't it? It's just unbelievable. And of course, our mission launched perfectly to Mars. Well, hopefully, it'll land perfectly on Mars.
That's the big thing. Yeah, we can launch Mars missions really well. They don't always get there.
Well, this is one complicated landing. If this thing happens, this will probably be the most complicated landing, ever done in the history of the world.
Yeah.
It is so outrageously complex. I hope it's all televised, but...
It's also, from what I understand, it's also now kind of outrageously complicated mission plan, too. So I guess you need a complicated craft like that to make the trip.
I don't know. I always learned in business school, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah,
I know. The KISS principle, and
we always can.
Yeah, so I just hope the JPL guys were right on the ball when they did their calculations and numbers and programming, and we'll find out in August.
Now, the other side of this is that the some of their more ambitious projects are getting trimmed and may even. Be cut back even more. They've got some funding, but not as much as they thought they would get, because the James Webb Space Telescope, for example, so far that project is weighing in at $8.8 billion. In July, the House Appropriations Committee recommended canceling the thing, but then Congress later restored the funding,
for now.
But it's still not slated to launch until like 2018.
So there
could be another president in office by then, and who knows?
And there could be more cost overruns, too.
Yeah, exactly. Also, NASA's budget itself may get trimmed. They're still desperate to find ways to cut federal spending across the board, they're trying to raise the debt ceiling again.
Well, that's automatic, as we were talking about before the show.
But they could get as much as 900 million cut from their budget for next year.
Well, so NASA is so, and space is so insignificant, they could cut the whole thing and it wouldn't make any difference.
But
it is visible, as we know.
Yeah, it wouldn't even run the country for more than a week, even less.
I saw something
once that said you could take the entire net worth of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, just take it away from them completely. Billions and billions of dollars, and you'd only run the U.S. government for 27 days.
Well, I think the interest on the debt is around $88 billion a day.
Yeah.
So
something
you may. I don't have a visa limit that high, but that's pretty.
Say what you want about public funded space programs. We get a lot more. I'm still a fan. We get a lot more bang for our buck out of that than we do anything else.
Anything else, yeah, anything. Absolutely. We don't get our bang for the buck. Well, maybe military, I don't know.
That's so secret, we'll never know.
Yeah, but I think we do, and NASA's very high profile for such a tiny part of the budget. It's, what, a half of 1%. And, we get an enormous amount of contribution to our lives. And probably to the whole world out of that one half of 1%.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. Well, what about SLS? That's gobbling up some bucks in the NASA budget.
That's coming up. Or what some critics call the Senate Launch System, with a skin made entirely of pork. It's almost like the Empire struck back on that one. What also came roaring back after the cancellation of the Constellation program, the Orion multipurpose crew vehicle came back under this SLS system. So right now, what's still technically on the table, on paper at least, is working toward getting astronauts to an asteroid by 2025 and maybe to Mars by the mid-2030s. And so Orion came back. SLS is still fighting it out. But that thing, even if it gets everything at once and they do all the development, it probably won't really start getting anywhere until 2021 at least.
Probably, and it may be as high as $38 billion when finished, if finished.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's some interesting irony, though. In the first place, we have, you know, the shuttle shutting down, and now, at least for now, until we get commercial crew going or some other program, we're buying seats on the Soyuz for our crews at $63 million a pop. So wouldn't you know it, and how ironic it is, as soon as this transition takes place, the Russians start having launch failures.
Yeah, six of them in a year.
Yeah. Well, and the most notable ones, of course, was the Progress supply ship that crashed on takeoff, and there was also a Mars probe mission using similar launch technology that was that had a misfire on the second stage.
Right.
It ended up in low Earth orbit, and now they say Phobos Grunt. Maybe that was a bad name for the thing, but
well, not in Russian. It means dirt. Grunt.
Yeah.
It's grunt. The grunt, yes.
But they,
it means soil, I guess, not dirt.
But it's going to come grunting back to Earth sometime in mid-January.
Right.
But that also created this buzz, this hornet's nest of, we just shut down the shuttle, and now the Russians are having problems with their craft, and oh, my God, what are we going to do? And, instead of just calming down and saying, okay, how's commercial crew going? How is this other stuff going? Can we put a little more money over here and that? And I noticed in the latest budget proposal, or at least budget that was passed, CCDEV got less than half what they were hoping for next year. I think it was only $406 million, as opposed to $850 that was being requested. I don't know how that's going to affect future commercial crew capabilities.
Well, they got reduced to $406 million, and a good portion of that is already allocated, so not even all of that is available to the companies.
Yeah.
And the NASA overhead part of that is $50 or $60 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that they get to take that right off the top for their overhead reimbursement. So, charming.
Yeah.
And there was a Soyuz failure last week, so they've got to do some work on their rockets over there.
But it got a lot of people in panic mode when these things started happening, and I know some people even said, "Well, we should take the shuttle out of retirement," and oh my God! And it does give us an opportunity to really talk about what we really need and what we're going to use it for. Getting Orion back off the drawing board and getting a big, multi 130-ton space launch system out there is all well and good. You're going to spend all this money, but where is it going? What is it going to do? Who's the customer? As always, we ask on this program, and what values are going to add? And right now, I still see it right now as a rocket to nowhere. But since Apollo, I haven't seen any government project of this kind of last through multi-administrations.
No, they always fail. But, I have a very faithful, good listener who really does believe in SLS. And tell me what you think of this. He says it's a placeholder for skills and labor and technology, so we don't lose it all as we're going through this really downturn, bad time, until a point where we can come back. At least we still have part of our infrastructure and our capability and our skill set available by working on this, even if they end up canceling it a year or two or three down the road. So he sees it as a placeholder.
So it's a high-tech welfare program.
Yeah, or a high-tech jobs program.
Uh-huh.
Well, but as I said, his terminology is a placeholder because we don't lose everything while we're in this downturn period. And this assumes that we're going to come out of the downturn period and space will be important again. And I'm not sure of that. But
that's a huge assumption.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's a depressing discussion probably have later in the program, I'm sure. But right now, I will also say that this sounds similar to an argument that was made in favor of the shuttle in the mid-70s, which was right after Apollo was officially ended. We were at a fork in the road. Now we could have taken those toys that were developed and gone out there and let them been commercialized and been fruitful and multiplied, but the team that made Apollo happen would have been kind of spread out amongst various contractors, which would have turned to various commercial operations, and for all we know, and we'll never know now, 1,000 flowers could have bloomed. But instead, to keep the team together, they devised the shuttle project, and that kept the team together for 3 decades. But it also had a downside effect was we didn't really go anywhere in space. We didn't go to Mars. We didn't go back to the moon. We didn't go out and explore our solar system the way everyone thought we were going to or that we should. But hey, we got this great high-tech team, and now they're making the same argument again. When do we get to go somewhere?
Well, I can't answer that question, but maybe people like Elon can answer it for us if they're successful in their efforts. Maybe the privates will just say, you know, to heck with all of it. We're heading to Mars in 15 years or whatever the capability allows them to do, and we're going to go do it.
Well, this is their opportunity.
Absolutely. This is their time.
This is the best opportunity in their time that they could possibly have.
I agree with you 100%.
And it's going to change a lot of people's minds should they succeed.
Your take, you think they will succeed?
I think so. In the long run, yeah. As they are learning the hard way, everything takes a little longer than expected. Virgin Galactic is still on a track towards a commercial launch, maybe year after next, early.
Early 2013, yeah.
2013. But Spaceship Two, White in particular, has been in development for 7 years now.
It's harder than they think.
It's harder than they think. In fact, they've done, I think it's 16 or 17 drop tests.
16.
16 now. Well, the 16th one, a couple months ago, raised a few eyebrows because apparently the feathering mechanism didn't deploy like it should immediately after the drop. And so it didn't come all the way out, and that thing just dropped like a stone, I guess.
Right. They almost lost it.
Yeah, so they de-feathered it back to its normal configuration and got onto a glide path. There were two pilots and an engineer on board for that one, and so they managed to bring it down safely. But what should have been an 11-minute drop took only 7 and change.
Be a pretty hairy rock.
It was a hairy everybody. So,
well, they're supposed to do a powered test with Spaceship Two later this year. Now, Mark Sarangelo of Sierra Nevada, who's doing this, is going to be on the show next week.
Okay.
And we're going to see if we can't pin him down. When will there be powered drop tests with the engine actually in Spaceship Two? Not drop tests, but powered test flights with the engine actually in Spaceship Two. Will that happen this year?
Yeah, that'll be a good question to ask. I'll be sure and tune in on that one because I'm interested to hear that too.
That's Wednesday night, next Wednesday night.
Okay, I've heard of, well, it might be late. I might be, depending on what, well, I might be home. We'll see.
Well, remember, you're 3 hours ahead of me.
Then I might be in a plane that day or not. So, but I'll catch it because I'm interested in knowing that because I've heard some, well, I'll say, insider reports that can't be confirmed and are unofficial, so don't quote me, please, but,
Well, you can always send an advanced email question if you think you're going to make
it. Yeah, there are questions about the engine itself.
I've heard them all, too. And
there's this
chap that we know, and he may be listening to the show tonight, Trent from Australia, mm-hmm. who has been raising questions about this on his blog in Australia. And he will probably listen live and will probably want to talk to Mark as well. And Mark will... What do they say? You're in the center seat or the hot seat or whatever it is when you're answering questions?
Absolutely.
You know, and should we swear him in before the show? Maybe I should do that with all Space Show guests. Have them swear in like they're going to be a witness in a trial before we start the show on air. So and then we can do the no spin zone here.
There you go.
a New Year's resolution for 2012. Every guest has to swear in.
Yeah, but then you get to do your rant off camera when you think, you know, what, nobody's recording, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It shows up on YouTube years later.
Probably. What else are some highlights?
Let's see. We've got to talk about the new rocket. There's a bunch of let's see what else.
What about people highlights? Did you note any people highlights?
Not really. I mean, the only people highlight is Reddit. Interestingly, it still is in the area of, you know, all the Russian space failures.
Uh-huh.
This year, I noticed that in this context, the current Russian president Dmitry Medvedev has threatened heavy fines or even criminal punishment for the people responsible for the failures.
On Phobos Grunt.
Yeah, not one, and all the failures of late.
Yeah.
But then I talk about companies, like we were talking about companies. He said people responsible. So this is like almost a throwback. I mean, in the Soviet days, if somebody did something like this, they'd end up in the gulag, and their faces would be airbrushed out of the pictures.
Pretty much so, and they'd be enjoying the summer in the frozen tundra of the big north.
Right, so you can't do that anymore in that country. So they, but they still like to act. You know, you got to have this get tough kind of policy. So I don't know if that kind of.
Well, Mike Griffin still makes the news, even though he's been out of office for 3 years.
I was gonna bring him up a little bit later too, but we can talk about that now because of course Paul Allen just.
Which straddle launcher, yeah.
The straddle launcher. Yeah. Mike Griffin is involved in that team, and I've read some interesting stuff about all this. Obviously, there's a lot of people that are kind of skeptical that, a couple of things they're skeptical about. One is that is a $300 million development cost going to be enough for something that ambitious? There's also questions about the overall value and what kind of markets they're going to approach. But that's an interesting project. This is one of the things where, in fact, Elon Musk is involved. He's not a partner. In fact, Straddle Launch is his...
He's a contractor.
It's a customer. Yeah, he's a contractor. And they're finally going to basically develop a hybrid, which would have been, if it had been a vertical launch, it would have been probably the Falcon 5.
Right.
But they skipped Falcon 5 development to go straight to 9 originally. But now it gets a chance to see life again in an air launch configuration.
I know there's a lot of people that are skeptical, but this is such a dream team of management and aerospace proven people. It's hard to vote against it.
Yeah, but the thing is too. I mean, the thing is, there's not too many places it can take off from, and it's a 12,000 foot runway, and they literally the thing that you know, it can't use the turnout at all. So it has to literally have to build a hangar at the end of it.
And it's about 100 yards plus wingspan. I mean,
yeah,
it's a big
and I know
plane.
At Mojave, the main runway there, while it's long enough, it's only 200 feet wide.
Yeah, it can't take the wingspan.
And the wingspan is 367. So, and it's also fully loaded. It'd be even too heavy even for Mojave's runway.
Well, maybe it can go to New Mexico.
It could, maybe.
They certainly have the space.
But someone else, who was it, wrote an interesting comment on this. I gotta find out who it was. It's Rand Simberg. Wrote an article about that.
In Transterrestrial.
No, well, he did it for moonandback.com, but he did a commentary.
Uh-huh.
But, he noticed that there's one thing that where Straddle Launch does have kind of an advantage because you can move that airplane around so you can make almost a perfect orbital insertion on the first try. And it'll rendezvous with something after a single orbit if you launch it right, as opposed to what we're doing now is like launching a Soyuz with some people on it, and it might be a day or two before they actually match orbits and dock with the ISS. It could also be used for more clandestine purposes. It's something that can launch that quickly and not be easily seen. You can launch a lot of different payloads with it on very short notice. And he thought it was interesting that Mike Griffin is involved in this thing, and one of his previous jobs was the head of InQtel. which is a VC firm for exotic technologies. It's in Virginia, and a lot of its money for investment came from the CIA.
Interesting.
Yeah, and another of the principals actually was a former program head of Boeing's X-37 and the military's X-37 program, and it turns out the X-37 meets the weight limit. The Stratolon.
So they may have a lot of options here.
Yeah, there may be options there that not everybody's, you know, can take advantage of, but so maybe they're playing both sides of the fence on that one.
So that's an interesting highlight for the year that happened just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Falcon 9 launch. There was one this year, right?
Yes. Was that this year or end of last year?
No, this year was early.
Talk about this? Okay.
Wasn't it early this year?
There was some kind of issue with it. They did a launch. They also did a test that kind of went south on September 12th. They had something called, it was a double engine failure. Now, what they called it was what they called an oxidizer-rich shutdown. Which actually was a protective move. They don't think there's really anything, any showstoppers involved in something like that. They think they just have to do a little tweaking. Some of the people involved, like on the committee that advises, you know, ISS and things, thought it was a little more important than that. And so the arguments continue.
Well, and they're set for February 7th, unless that date slips a little bit.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing, because that'll be the first time a private commercial craft has been allowed to rendezvous and dock with the ISS. So, yes, we wish them luck with that. We need it. That will at least give another option to progress. And so,
how do you see the cruiser contract thing, the suborbital research contracts? I know they cut four contracts, I think, this year, right? Or maybe more than that for flights in the future booked.
That's part of a budget problem, like everything else. I don't think there's anything specifically hardware or political oriented in that. There's cutbacks all over. There's still, even as late as last week, I'm reading it right here, the number of participating companies and the frequency of flights continues to grow for the Flight Opportunities Program that includes suborbital. And they're still doing open solicitation for flight opportunities for until the end of December of 2014.
How do you assess the layoffs that happened in NASA this year?
Well, a lot of that was completion of shuttle program in that orientation. So it's an open story that we'll still have to see what happens, whether or not commercial efforts can make up some of that slack and open up new opportunities for the folks that were laid off. I know it was kind of a sad statement this year. I attended ISDC, as you've mentioned, and spoke at the business track. But they did have a job fair during ISDC. I'd never seen that before. They tell me it's happened in the past, but this is a big one. And, of course, it was in Huntsville.
How did it go? Was it a successful job fair?
Oh, I think it was okay. I just poked my head in briefly. There's a lot of people there. So it was one day. It was also open to the public. So, but there's that commentary.
That they needed a job fair.
That they needed a job fair. Given things were getting close. Now, at that point, was the end of May. There were still a couple of shuttle flights left to go, is all. And so they were just feeding to reality.
You have a question from Paul, who is in San Diego, California, by email. And Paul says, if you can assess what went down in 2011 compared to other years, especially the more recent years, how do you think 2011 shaped up in space?
2011, it shaped up as a year of just amazing transition. The loss of shuttle was, in many people's minds, was huge. and still leaves open a lot of question of what's going to happen next and how it's going to and how things are going to operate and you know if how important it is for America, the country and the government to be a space-faring nation as a showpiece versus private commercial sectors that could certainly, hopefully, soon service at least low Earth orbit and work in conjunction with government programs to kind of extend those boundaries of exploration. I mean, there are programs in place on paper. There's a lot of rhetoric being bounced around. There's a lot of old guard, I think, in both old-time contractors and certain senators and congressmen in key districts who would have loved to keep things going the way they'd always gone. And so there's, and so this pendulum has been swinging back and forth all year, and there's no end in sight. So it's been the most contentious year in many, many years in terms of both space development and space exploration.
My question is a follow-up to what Paul said, is how would you assess the success and growth of space advocacy in 2011 as compared to earlier years?
Well, it's hard, you know, it's hard to assess because we don't really, it's hard to keep score. Sometimes things, a lot of advocacy happens just as much behind the scenes as it does in front of the media. I know there was, and I guess an example of this, for some of these programs, including commercial crew and cargo, we were using Space Act agreements as far as making, as far as the contract relationship went, and Space Act agreements are just a lot easier to run and manage because of the reduced paperwork and bureaucratic requirements.
Right.
And they made a decision somewhere in the middle of this year, sometime early this summer, to go back to the old system of federal acquisition regulations, the FAR, which can be so bureaucratized and paperwork oriented and takes a million signatures to do anything that only the big boys can really play that game. In fact, one friend of mine who works in that area was telling me that he said the C-3PO office might become C-2PO soon because of that. But just recently, the decision was made to scrap that again and go back to Space Act agreements. So somebody got to somebody and put pressure on somebody in the background. I'm sure advocacy played a role.
I would hope. I don't have any information on that, but I would hope. Or maybe common sense played a role.
Well, you know, there's not a lot of that.
That's wishful thinking.
The government is concerned in particular, but some areas show more than others.
Andrew in Chicago says, Tom, we got a political campaign coming up for president, and do you think that space will rise to the level of a discussion topic in the actual campaigns between Obama and whoever is challenging him?
You know, not a whole lot, unless people in the advocacy community and your contributor there actually bring it up in the conversation. They probably won't have the conversation. There are so many other things going on, and there are huge, huge problems. And this is one of the things the advocacy community doesn't always realize, or they just are in denial about it. I mean, we go to these conferences, I go to ISDC, I go to New Space and these other things, and everybody gets together for a week.
It's rah, 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 Siskin, ball, right? It's all the cheerleaders.
Rah, it's a big kitty, big emotional experience, and you just burn yourself out. You don't get any sleep, and you have the time of your life. And then you go home, there's this huge, just emotional down because you're back in the real world. And in the real world,
nobody cares about
space. We have a $16 trillion debt and $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities, and there are 17% unemployment rate, 46 million people.
Whoa. 17%? We keep hearing we're less than 9 now. What are you counting?
Well, there's official figures, and then there's the figures other groups point out where you're not counting the people who gave up looking for work. They're not counting people who are partially employed.
Yeah, they cook the numbers, I know.
Underemployed. They cook the numbers.
Yeah, and they cook the inflation numbers, too.
You really want to count everything. The number's probably closer to 17%. I've been seeing this for a year now. But these are real world problems that the, again, to get back to the question, it's, these are going to be the main topics that's going to be on everybody's minds in the coming campaign season. And space development is going to take a very poor backseat to that, unless we in the advocacy community and in the commercial industry can start getting our act together and making it very clear that not only is this important, but in some regards, it could be an answer to some of our problems in creating and keeping high-tech jobs in America and improving STEM education and things of that nature. And you have to get up there and be loud and start making the case and make sure the candidates on the campaign trail get asked those questions. Otherwise, they just won't care.
Tiffany sent you an email from Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And Tiffany says, David, I'm a stealth listener to the space show, but I've decided to get out of stealth mode to ask Tom a question. And here is my question. Do you think that it is at all possible that somebody might actually make the case and it might actually kick in that space can actually grow the economy, be a job creator, and be a source of what we're all looking for in this country with all of the money being spent right here in America on planet Earth? Do you think it is at all feasible that a Republican or a Democrat or an Independent or somebody might be able to make that case and have it stick? I say that all the time on the show, by the way. I'm a big proponent of space as an investment, not as an expense, because of that. But nobody listens. You know, who's the guy, the comedian who says, I don't get any respect? What's his name? Don Rickles or whatever his name is?
Not Don Rickles.
Anyway, so maybe a listener will tell him having another senior moment.
Rodney Dangerfield.
I ain't getting no respect. Well, no one's listening. So, so anyway, what do you think? Does Tiffany have a point? You think it will finally take some legs somehow in this campaign?
It's going to get some legs, I think. I mean, we've always had, we've had a robust industry in some respect or another for a long, long time. I think it's been way too defense and NASA-oriented, of course. And now the commercial guys are trying to get more volume going and get costs down and let the rest of us play, which is the biggest point. If you can get enough commercial interest so there's room for everyone else to play on that sandbox, then I think it could be a part and an important part of the U.S. economy. I think it should be. I'm all in favor of it. It's just how we get from here to there is the big question. From a policy standpoint and from an economics and business standpoint. It's never going to, be the be-all and end-all of the U.S. economy.
Okay.
We're just not a manufacturing type of economy anymore. That's another depressing statistic. I think since 2000, we've lost 55,000 manufacturing plants.
Plants or jobs?
Plants. Millions of manufacturing jobs have outsourced and left the country. But what I realize is over a plant a day has closed down since 2000. And probably that's like a hockey stick chart. You know, it probably started out slow and then really picked up in the last 3 or 4 years. But I saw that number, it just astounded me.
That is pretty astonishing.
But we always think about huge plants like, you know, General Motors or something. I mean, a manufacturing facility can have a couple of dozen people in it. Depends on what you're making and who you're selling it to. So there's large and small alike, but they've been closing down at just an incredible rate. And those jobs are going away, and they're not coming back.
Arnie is in Boston. And listeners, you really ought to use the telephone. It's a lot more fun. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Nobody here bites, so pick up the phone.
Well, I do.
You bite, yeah, right. But anyway, Arnie in Boston sent in a note and said there seems to be a very strong push to internationalize for sharing the expenses, the wealth, and all sorts of other things, our space program. What do you think of internationalizing the space program, if for no other reason than to help hold down our share of the expenses?
Well, I would say to that, look at the International Space Station. and see that as your example. 100 billion, sleep six, years to develop, years to keep together. They're talking about shutting it down in 10 years or less. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to have a use for it. But depends on what kind of international cooperation you're talking about. International cooperation in government space programs. Europe, for example, is in just as bad a shape as the U.S., if not worse, in terms of their economic plans right now and their banking sector and everything else. I doubt that the first thing on their mind is for ESA to do a joint venture with Roscosmos and NASA and their contractors to do a joint mission to Mars anytime soon. That's all well and good when everybody's fat and happy. You can talk about things like that. In near-term future, I'm not seeing it.
Canada's in
good shape. I'm not going to count out the possibility, but these kind of joint ventures don't happen very often, and they always end up kind of overpriced and under-delivering.
So do you think the international effort is overstated, or?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually the best efforts that happen in the world and in history, usually the result of a single-minded vision by somebody or a small group that gets traction. So that's been what our history has done. It hasn't, you know, we haven't explored the world by committee. We won't explore the solar system by committee in the end.
Maybe we should, right?
Yeah.
So we won't explore the world by committee.
Well, we didn't. It was explorers with a vision who got funding and got out there.
Absolutely. So would you turn your back on the internationalization talk and efforts, or would you leave it open and do it when it was prudent and available to do? But look at how to fund and go forward as an American project.
Well, I just don't get into the big rah-rah over that, I guess, because I'm such a privateer. And I mean, most of the efforts I'm involved in are trying to open up the frontier to everybody. And once again, like with our typical government space programs, I mean, this is the same effort that only managed to launch 500 people in 50 years. And so once again, now we'll have a global project where another 20 people will go to another planet and the other 7 billion of us are supposed to sit back and applaud. I know in America, at least, there are a lot of us who are tired of this. And I don't mind applauding even an international mission to Mars as long as I can do it from the comfort of a private commercial space station operated by Robert Bigelow. And I'll be waving out the porthole at them as they fly off. Then I'm okay with it.
So let's talk about Bigelow. He laid off half of his force in 2011.
Well, it's because he had some of his projects, the funding dried up on them, and so he's concentrating on certain core focus projects that he actually has an income stream for. He's working very closely with Boeing on a couple of things, and there's a cash flow stream for that. And so the other things that didn't have a customer or didn't have funding going yet, you know, he just shut them down temporarily. Once those streams come back again, he's happy to reactivate it.
Well,
that's the gist of what I've read about it.
Well, me too. Of course, he probably won't be able to retain those people. They'll go on for other jobs and other projects. So, you know, and part of what he said was, you know, there were simply no rides. There's no space taxi service. There's no way to get his product up there or to get people up to his product.
And that's that's the biggest problem with a lot of these efforts, including even, you know, scientific instrument packages and payloads.
Yeah, it's just...
They're all waiting for a ride.
Everyone's waiting for a ride. It's dragging.
Yeah.
Let's take our first break. Actually, it'll be our only break because we're already an hour into the program. And listeners, we'll come back with more of your questions, and hopefully some of you will quit emailing me, and we'll use the telephone, 1-866-687-7223. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back, everybody. This is our Tuesday evening Space Show program. We're doing the year in review, and we're going to look ahead a little bit into 2012. Our guest is Tom Olson. You can call us and participate in this show. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. The Mojave crowd and Spaceport America, what do you have for that for 2011?
I think they're going to still go forward. They'll have, a lot of these guys have smaller budgets, but they always manage to build something and test something and fly something, and some of them are off the tether these days, so I think they're going to increase and improve. X-Corps in particular, they're getting some good cash flow. They've made some new agreements with certain international partners, particularly in Curacao. Let's see if I can find that.
Also in Asia, I think.
Yeah. Well, they tried something in Asia, and it kind of faded away, but they've got South Korea is still, in play, but they just made a big deal with doing tourism and scientific flights from Curacao. That was just firmed up this last September, and they completed what they say is a multi-million-dollar transaction as part of an eight-figure deal that they funded through their development phase. And so they've been hiring people, and they're beginning actual parallel development of the systems to make Lynx a reality. And if you remember, Lynx is something that just takes up one person and a pilot, and they get about, halfway out of the atmosphere real quickly, and the whole flight takes 30 seconds, so they're kind of up and down again, but they get a little zero-G for a few seconds. And they can also be used to fly small science packages and a lot of other things. It's supposed to be a very quick kind of thing and with a very quick turnaround.
So they get a quickie, is that what you're telling me?
Well, it's a quick flight, yeah, 30-minute flight, but the point is this quick turnaround. You can fly several of these a day in all practical terms.
Uh-huh.
And so right now they're just finishing the wind tunnel testing, and they got nearly the final form of the wings that they want to do. The thing's only 30 feet long, and they promised they want to do a 2-hour turnaround and maybe up to 4 flights a day.
That's pretty ambitious.
Well, but that deal with Curacao may put them over the top. That would be really good.
Okay, you ready for a caller?
Sure.
Hi, caller. Who are you, please?
Terry in Corpus Christi.
Hi, Terry. This is Tom Olson. Have at it.
Tom, who do you think survives CCDEV 3?
Who do I think survives CCDEV 3? I like them all.
All of them?
Elon surely has a good shot at that, and so does Orbital. So that's going to pick two competitors, I'd probably pick those two more than anybody else. They have the most skin in the game.
More than Sierra Nevada? With Boeing?
They're playing catch up, though. I mean, they've got some interesting stuff. I'm a little more skeptical about that one, only because they haven't done as much yet, and these other guys have a lot more actual flight experience. But they're doing some, I guess they're going to be doing some drop tests on Dream Chaser early next year. And so I'll be interesting to see how those go. But I think if there's the market for it, there's a place for all these guys to play.
Absolutely. What else, Terry?
Tom, do you think Falcon 9 Heavy actually comes into existence?
I think the capability to build it is certainly there. I don't think they'd announce something like that without thinking they could follow through and make it happen. What really is going to be critical is whether there's a customer for it. And this is where the big argument then went around again with SLS. They thought, why are they having NASA build SLS when they could buy a couple of Falcon Heavies and do a little bit of on-orbit assembly, maybe, and accomplish the same thing for a hell of a lot less money? And that's been the big argument all year.
Will we find this out, guys, in 2013, in 2012, or will we have to wait longer?
For what now? I'm sorry?
Well, will we have answers to these questions in 2012, or will we have to defer until a later date?
I think on some of these, we're going to have to defer until 2013, only because it's the middle of a very, very hotly contested election cycle. And there's going to be a lot more things on the table than everybody's going to be talking about. And there's a lot of... it's a watershed year.
Who do you think...
There was a watershed year a long time ago. There's so much social unrest and things that were going on. There was war, and there was protests in the streets, and there was violence. And it seemed like everything was disintegrating around you. And that year was 1968. And at the very end of that year, three guys took a trip around the moon and, like, inspired everybody.
Well, you know, nobody's taken a trip around anything for inspiration that I know of.
But, you know, I mean, it's like what we talked about before. This is a wave maybe in the kind of years that I think 2012 is shaping up to be. You know, space is poised to save the day again. So I'm really hoping that somebody steps up and does the job.
Terry, what else?
Does SLS survive 2013, regardless of who wins?
I think it survives. Well, I think it survives if, you know, actually, it's not even that dependent on who wins. I think it's dependent on who wins the presidency as much as it is who wins in Congress. If Congress changes hands again, if certain key senators and congressmen involved in that are just not in office anymore, or something else happens that changes the dynamic of the Congress and they're focused on the funding stream, that's really where the game is going to be played. I doubt that who becomes president at the end of next year is going to make a huge difference in that question.
So if the Republicans take both houses next year, is it pretty well doomed, or does it survive?
Well, it's mostly key Republican senators and congressmen in key space districts that put SLS on the ground to begin with. So if they stick around and they still retain influence and they retain majority memberships in the key committees, if the GOP takes over the Congress again, I would say it has a greater chance of living than it would otherwise.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
That's all for me, David.
Okay.
Tom, thanks for your time. I appreciate you coming on the show.
All right.
Everybody have a great New Year.
Thanks, Terry. You too.
You too, David.
Bye-bye.
Terry.
Listeners, that frees up our line. 866-687-7223, Kathy in Phoenix, Arizona. Does space policy fare better with the reelection of President Obama or a yet undecided and unknown Republican candidate?
Well,
I don't know how to answer that. I don't know.
I'm not sure how to answer that either. It was President Obama last year, or about a year and a half ago, who first articulated a new policy direction that actually got the commercial developers a seat at the table and some actual, and backed it up with real money. So, as far as that goes, that could come under question with a new administration, depending on who it is. Most of the people running on the Republican side right now are real old guard type of guys and big corporate guys, and they're perfectly happy, I'm sure, with a lot of business as usual in terms of, especially in terms of the military and the big contractors and things like that, and they've been kind of bought and paid for by those lobbyists for a long time. In the really off chance that, say, Ron Paul got elected president, not likely, but you never know in a year like next year shaping up to be, should something like that happen, he's a real privateer.
Yeah, he'd kill the government program, I think.
He would probably, yeah, he'd probably take a wrecking ball to it and sow salt upon the ruins. So we might go a little too far in the other direction. But with, and again, as I mentioned in, with the previous caller's comment, question, even if Obama wins re-election, what happens in the Congress and who's sitting on what committee and what are they going to do going forward? They could gut a lot of things even without Obama's signature.
Absolutely.
So we, again, we have a very brief window of a golden opportunity to, make something work and show the naysayers that the commercial sector is finally poised to stand and deliver.
Spaceport.
But the window is going to close rapidly in the next couple of years if they don't actually do it, I think.
Okay, and another big event was Spaceport America finally opened up.
Well, it's technically, parts of it have been open and operational for about 5 years. But this is the first big hangar for Virgin Galactic and associated other companies. They've been doing some vertical launch out of there since 06.
Right, with Up Aerospace.
Yeah. But this is the next step in the development plan for getting the first real commercial passenger stuff going. So, yeah, that was a huge opening.
And the runway is open.
Yeah.
So that's a milestone.
Right, but I don't think I haven't checked yet. Maybe one of your listeners can check for me and confirm that. When we were talking earlier about a straddle launch.
Uh huh.
Can it take off or land at Spaceport America?
I think the runway is long enough, and I don't know the clearance with the runway on the width to where the buildings are located, so I don't know the answer to that. As you said, it's 360 feet or something wingspan. It's up more than 100 yards.
Yeah, but wingspan, but also it weighs.
It weighs a ton.
Hundreds of tons.
Hundreds of tons.
And that's why.
Yeah.
I think Mojave could only handle a couple hundred thousand pounds, you know, gross weight. It was built, for example, the Mojave runway was built on the gross fully loaded takeoff weight of a 747. So this thing is a lot bigger than that. And with the full payload, and you've got it was essentially a Falcon 5 hanging under it with that payload, and that'll take as much as 63,000 pounds or something. 23,000, I'm sorry. The whole thing is 63. But the thing is just gigantic, and even the Mojave runway won't handle all that weight. So that was a question I was raising with Spaceport America. Even if it can handle the wingspan, even if it can handle the runway length, can it handle the weight?
I don't know either. Maybe someone will be able to look it up and tell us, as you suggest.
Yeah.
Also in 2011, which is about to come to a screeching halt. You manage the Space Frontier Foundation's business plan contest. We did talk about that somewhat on the air at the time it was unfolding and happening. Any big differences in quality or about the competition itself from 2011 to the last time it was held, which I guess was 29, right?
Oh, absolutely. Here's the thing. There's a great story behind this. Again, we've done business plans. The foundation, I'm a board member of the foundation, going on my fourth year. Foundation has done business plan competitions in the past for several years, and they did it on a, and we had a small prize of like $5,000, which is from the Heinlein Prize Trust. But they were kind of early adopters of this whole thing, and they've been involved in other business plan competitions, including the one, the very well-known one that they do every year at Rice University. So they've always been a great partner in this enterprise, and they still are, and I hope they remain such. So we did it with some volunteers and like business students and things like that, and it was a very small, low-key kind of event, and it didn't get a lot of traction. And we actually skipped 2010 because it just wasn't any time to do anything. 2011, things changed because there was in the pipeline for the 6 months prior. In the pipeline, there was this. The foundation applied for a new grant from NASA and through Ames for just such a thing, to really expand the scope and to do some also some program costs, program management, and a bunch of other things, and more or less partner up to create better business development opportunities and get a lot more players on the table. And when it looked like the grant wasn't going to come through, they called me and said, you know, Tom, we've only got about maybe 2.5 months to new space, and this thing is kind of sitting here. Can you take it over? We may only get the Heinlein prize money, like 2009. I thought, well, okay, I've got boilerplate for that. You know, we can set that up fairly quickly and probably get some good competitors in there regardless. And it was okay. Well, we started that process, and I started recruiting judges and people to run the boot camp, including yourself, David. You were on that
right.
Boot camp. That was a lot of fun. What happened was on June 2nd, the grant actually came through after all. And all of a sudden, we could shout from the rooftops that instead of just the Heinlein money, we had to, because of the NASA grant, we had $25,000 as the first prize to give away, and $2,500 for a third prize, and the Heinlein $5,000 went for a second prize. And we only had 7 weeks to get this together. And in 7 weeks, there were 36 intents to compete filed. 26 executive summaries were actually submitted within that limited time limit. And we managed to narrow that down to five finalist entries. And we flew them out to Ames, and they all did very well in that short a period of time. And some really good competitors were in there, and the winner of the first prize was an outfit called Altius Space Machines out of Colorado. They built something called, and I've actually seen this thing, it's called a sticky boom. I don't know if he's a static or something, but it just has this little flexible thing on the end of a long boom. It'll just stick one thing to another thing, and that probably helps for coupling things in orbit and or grabbing other things. It might be used for orbital debris mitigation or a lot of has a lot of different uses, but mostly to make it easier for spacecraft to dock with each other. They can just go out and grab the other thing they're wanting to dock with and just pull it in, boom. That was $25,000. Second prize went to Celestial Circuits, and they developed some circuit boards that standardize data acquisition programming for CubeSats. So it's just a module that any CubeSat builder can now plug in that standardizes their data gathering process in a very easy to use way. And the third prize went to Final Frontier Design for their spacesuit work. So that was a lot of fun, and I sat down with, you know, I had a team. I actually, hired Exodus Consulting Group, which is my consulting company, and so brought in some people to make this happen. And we sat down with our sponsors and some other people from the foundation and had a meeting afterwards, and they want to continue for next year. And we applied right after that for an extension for the current grant, and that grant was just accepted and went through just within the last week. And so next year is going to be huge, and they followed the recommendations. We had some great judges from Silicon Valley and elsewhere that participated this year, and on their recommendation, they thought if you increase the prize amount, not only is everyone going to come out of the woodwork to really put this show on the map, but you're going to raise a lot of eyebrows in Silicon Valley itself, and a lot of guys from there and investors are going to come and take a look at what's going on. And so looks like next year, first prize will be $100,000.
Wow.
And second prize will be $10,000, and then we still have, hopefully, we still have a Highline prize of at least $5,000 to go to third place. We're also looking for corporate sponsorships to increase the values of the second and third prizes, or even the first prize if you want. We haven't done an official announcement yet. We just bought a new domain to use. I believe it's newspacebpc.com. Don't quote me right yet. I just saw this in an email like 2 days ago. So we're going to be making a more formal announcement hopefully in mid-January. I've got a speaking engagement in Toronto on January 20th. I'm hoping to be able to make the formal announcement then.
So when is it going to be? And is it back at NASA Ames?
It'll be back at Ames next year. It's the very last week of July. At Ames. It's part and parcel of the New Space 2012 conference. And the business plan competition is an event within that.
So are you going to run a boot camp again?
We're going to let's get into that. We're going to run a boot camp. In fact, David, I hope you'll participate again.
Well, I want an invitation sent to me with pretty bows in green and dancing girls wearing Oklahoma University cheerleader uniforms for Boomer Sooner.
I'll
now, if you can arrange that, that's because they had such a miserable, disgusting football season this year. I want to get some enjoyment out of being out of being an Okie fan. God, it's been an insult.
Well, be prepared, because what we're doing is this year we're reaching out to also not just the larger space community, but also other industries, including nanotech and biotech.
Well, you've been talking about that for years.
Well, we're finally going to make it happen.
Good.
Because I would like to see some contestants that do these things. And this is slightly off topic, but I want to bring it up, because in these presentations that I do, I talk about doing kind of cross-pollinating with other industries to not only get more technologies developed that could be used in space, but also solve problems on Earth. And we get a greater pool of investment involved, and they're all kind of working with each other to create positive solutions. Because if the ultimate goal of spaceflight is settlement long term, we need to do all sorts of things that we're not doing now. It's not all just about key hardware. It's going to be about human factors. It's going to be about protection against the dangers of the space environment itself on the human body. It's going to be, we might have to literally cure cancer if we're going to be able to have long-term settlements in space. People are going to be exposed to way too much radiation and a lot of other things, and they can't afford to bring a fully staffed hospital with them when they put their first settlements on Mars.
Absolutely.
So biotech is going to play a huge, huge role in this, and it's going to be very dependent on it. And so let's get them in the game now.
Okay, well, yeah, God willing, I'd be happy to do boot camp. I enjoy the boot camp part.
Well, it's 2 days next year, David.
It's 2 days?
It's going to be 2 days.
Why is it 2 days?
A lot of new ideas for that, and we can talk about this offline or on another show, perhaps, and we just focus on the
Well, why is it 2 days? Is that because you have more contestants?
We're going to have more contestants. We're going to have 10 semifinalists this year.
Okay, and, would take up 2 days.
And they're going to be narrowed down to 5 finalists at the end of the 2 days.
Well, that was, you would, for 10, given how much time we spent with 5, you would absolutely need 2 days.
Yeah, we're also considering doing something, and I learned this one in at I went to the International Astronautical Congress in Cape Town in October, and something I learned there that was really interesting. They did something called speed mentoring. So you have all the coaches and you have all the contestants, and they sit down and everybody gets like 20 minutes or half an hour.
Oh, like speed dating.
Like speed dating. And you do this and you just keep rotating. So you'll get an opportunity, at least for a short time.
To do everyone.
To look at everybody on a one-to-one basis. And see how they're doing. We're talking about making that part of the program.
Are you going to have the same people as you did last year?
I think we're going to mix it up a little bit, and we're going to need more people, so I'm going to be out proactively recruiting.
Now, keep in mind, that while we're doing boot camp, we miss out on the New Space Conference.
That's why we're going to start a day early. So, yeah, you miss out a little bit on the first day. You might see, because we're going to start probably, the conference starts on Thursday. We're probably going to do, if the schedule works out the way we're planning it, the first day of boot camp, which will be the most intense day, that will be on Wednesday.
Okay.
So we'll do that all day Wednesday. And then Thursday morning will be the final bits of the boot camp where they really get to hone their image. And then you guys can take part in parts of the conference in the afternoon as long as you get together and decide who's going forward. And hopefully at the end of the conference sessions on Thursday, we'll actually make that formal announcement in front of the crowd who made the cut.
Okay.
That's kind of how we're thinking about it now. This could alter a little bit here and there. We still have a lot more meetings to have. But,
is this going to be at the DoubleTree again?
That I'm not sure.
Okay.
We haven't announced the venue yet. They're still doing hotel negotiations. So that's a separate topic. I don't know.
Okay.
I would have maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. That other place they had in Sunnyvale was more accessible.
Yeah. I just know it's Ames. That's all.
Okay.
That's all I know at this point. That's where the action is.
All right. Well, count me in if you want me.
Okay. Speaking of that, I just wanted to also mention, I guess I'll make a formal announcement here. Jeff Krukin, you know who he is?
Yeah, of course. He used to be the director of the deal.
Well, he has officially
foundation joined
Exodus Consulting Group
as a
managing partner.
So
he'll be working with me directly in making the New Space 2012 business plan competition not only worked really well, but the best ever.
Cool. Who else is with you? Shubber is still with you?
Shubber's still there. And of course, I've got some other people that we recruit on site. Joel Venus will be with us again. Liz Kinnick was with us this last year. She's moved on. She's taking over a lot of the program things for the Teachers in Space Project.
Oh, instead of Ed?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Ed's moving on. But
oh, really? I'm not aware of this. So
he's going to do some other things.
What's he going to do?
I think it's been formally announced, but Liz is taking over the programming aspect, I think.
Of Teachers in Space.
Yeah, Ed may have another role. I'm not sure how that's going to work out yet, but...
Interesting.
I think there's been an announcement. There'll probably be another one.
And Liz is still in New York, right?
Yes, she is.
With the bed and breakfast?
Yeah. But my point of that is she won't be working with me next year on...
Your loss.
Yeah, I know, but it's their game, so that all works out. But I've got Jeff is coming in, Joel Venus is coming back.
She was trying to put together something to bring, what do you call it? What's the shuttle coming to New York? God, am I having too many senior moments? Unbelievable.
We're getting Enterprise.
Yeah, Enterprise. She was going to put together like a welcoming party or celebration she was talking about doing. Do you know if that is underway or what's happening with bringing...
That is still under discussion and it's underway. I don't know if there's been any formal sit-downs yet. It's still a little while, still another year or two before this is actually going to happen, so...
Yeah, I've even seen some things that people are having second thoughts about giving it to New York.
Well, it's Enterprise. It didn't even fly except in the back of a 747.
No, they're thinking it should go to other places other than New York. I've seen discussion on that, and New York apparently hasn't put together the money for the inside. It has to be displayed inside. It can't be displayed outside. So they have to have
a barge, right? That's what they're talking about now.
Yeah, a building for it or something where it's protected from the weather.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess some of that is still undecided. I wanted to come to her big bash when Enterprise came. I'm coming to the one in Los Angeles for Endeavor, but I'd also like to go to the one and cover it for the space show for Enterprise.
Well, we'll see if it still happens. We've got a year or two to wait, so
Absolutely. So actually, when we look at what we've been talking about for 2011 for the past almost an hour and a half, there's really been a lot of stuff that went down this year.
There has.
Good and bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of launch problems, a lot of rocket problems happened. A lot of policy fighting and dysfunction happened, but a lot has been accomplished.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm looking so forward to next year.
What do you look forward to most for next year? What should we, in your opinion, keep our eyes on, say, for the first two or three months? I mean, what's the NASA budget going to be when it comes out in and around February 1st? I'm sure they'll miss the deadline. The president always misses it.
Also come out about the same time that that Falcon launches to ISS.
Yeah, and
that'd be a good timing moment for them if they can get it right. There's a couple things that are going on. There's a few things that are going on next year. There's something NASA's supposed to be launching next year if they have the budget. I'm sure I think it's already in place. It's called the Gravity Recovery and Interior Laboratory mission. That's going to the moon. And it consists of two identical spacecraft, and they orbit the moon at only 30 miles altitude. And they're monitoring, there's this microwave beam that's transmitted between them. And they're trying to determine the distance between the spacecraft as they pass through the moon's gravity field and really track the changes in the moon's gravity field. And then they crash it, and then, as usual, after 4 months, they crash it into the moon's surface. But, okay.
Well, that's what we do with hardware.
Also, China is expected to launch its first manned space lab next year. That'll be something to look for. We're looking, hopefully, to Virgin Galactic lighting that rocket engine next year. And, of course,
And Falcon in orbital has its first launch, too.
Yep, Dragons and Swans, yes. So the first Dragon capsule will make its maiden voyage to the ISS, and it's also possible that the Cygnus capsule from Orbital Sciences could make its debut next year. It's supposed to be on top of the Taurus too.
Well, they renamed it to the Antares.
Antares, yeah, but that's due to fly in May if they keep to their schedule.
So of course we see what the president proposes for the NASA budget on or around February 1st.
Right. There's also Planetary Society is getting in the game again. They have a new, they're developing a new light sail.
A new solar sail craft,
and they hope to launch sometime next year.
On what?
That I don't know.
Well, Lou Friedman, who is the head of light sail for the Planetary Society, is coming back on the show in a week or two, and I'm sure we'll hear about it. So far, they're not having a good track record with their efforts, are they?
Well, you know, I mean, they get stuff up there, and it doesn't go very far.
Well, because they're using Ruski hardware here.
Well, maybe third time's the charm. I don't know.
I don't know either. Okay. They were on Phobos Grunt, and they were on an earlier Dnieper rocket that didn't make it. So,
Also, the Dawn spacecraft, which has been at the asteroid Vesta we talked about earlier, that's supposed to actually go off and target Sears. Another new, they're going to a second asteroid next year. Hopefully. It's going to move into another orbit. What else is going on? Oh, of course, you know, the big huge Mars rover we just talked about.
Yeah, Curiosity will be in August.
Curiosity should land on August 6th.
And our Deep Horizons continues on to Pluto.
Yes, it does.
In a nice fashion. And Voyager 1 continues to get further and further out into beyond the solar system.
It does. But Dream Chaser, as we said before, will do drop test next year. We've got the X-37B is still up there. Presumably, it'll come down next year.
Yeah, and we don't know what that is, really, do we?
We don't know what that is or what's in it. There's going to be a few new additions planned to the ISS.
Oh, whoa. I don't know about what are the two. What are the additions to the ISS? I'm not up on that.
Russia's going to launch something called the Nauka Multipurpose Laboratory Module. It's just a new room that they're adding on to the Zvezda port, and it replaces the older Pier's docking compartment.
Okay.
And it will house science experiments and cargo, and it'll also be used for docking, and as well as work and rest, extra rest area for the crew.
Okay.
And it's going to launch on a Proton. What else?
Nothing about the space elevator on your horizon?
Not right now. They're going lunar these days.
Well, do you believe it?
Last time I heard from Michael Lane, well, it's certainly less ambitious, but more perhaps more doable. I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Who's going to fund it for them?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, I haven't talked to Michael about it. I'm surprised he hasn't wanted to come on the space show.
I just
to talk
Michael.
About
he was in New York a couple of weeks ago. And
how's he doing?
To hook up. He's doing okay, but he's in New York begging for money. So
the story of our lives.
Yeah, he's supposed to be there again. Maybe I'll catch up with him later. And
well, I'm surprised he hasn't asked.
He'll go. I'll tell him to give you a call. And
yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't said, put me on the show. Let me tell you all about the Lunar Space Elevator. I've been reading about it and seeing about it. I'm pretty skeptical, but, you know, I'm a cynic and a hard-nosed guy anyway.
Well, absolutely.
So, but I wish Michael well. He's a nice guy. And, man, in this economy, I would not want to be raising money for a Lunar Space Elevator. That seems a big reach.
Well, we have opportunities to do some amazing things in the next couple of years, and it may be the last few chances we have before certain doors get closed again. Or
they may stay
open. If we do it the right way, those doors will stay open.
They'll stay open. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what, of course, you and I hope for.
Well, probably the vast majority of the people listening to this show. Do you see any educational breakthroughs, anything like that, with STEM education, with space inspiration coming down into college or grade school or middle school or high school? Do you track anything on the educational outreach level that might show up for the year?
I don't track it that much, honestly. I mean, I appreciate the effort. I think it's important because our schools are, you know, our school systems in general are have been very underperforming in a lot of ways. I think we're number two in the world on average in terms of per student spending, but we're averaging like number 25 in the world in a lot of things, whereas educational outcomes are concerned. So anything that can improve that is a plus in my book. But I don't track it. I don't check things, you know, year over year to see if there's been anything that makes a difference.
There are.
I'm a business investment guy. What can I tell you?
Sally is in upstate New York. She says there's quite a few space exhibits going on in New York City right now. Tom, are you aware of them? There's one at the big museum that Neil runs, and there's a couple in different art galleries in New York.
I am aware of them to an extent. I've been so busy last few
months. Have you been able to see any of them?
I haven't had a chance to go down and see them at all, no.
I'd like to see the one at the the American Museum of Natural History?
Uh-huh.
They have the big one going on, and there are some galleries that have space exhibits, and I had them written down, but I've lost the paper. So I don't remember where the galleries are and what the exhibits are. So, listener, if you want to email me the information, I have some friends visiting in New York right now on holiday from San Francisco. I'll see if they won't stop by and go see what and check them out. But you ought to go see the one at the American Museum of Natural History. I hear it's pretty good.
Yeah, if I can stay in town long enough to make that happen, you're absolutely right. I think I've got a January from hell coming up, but maybe after some dust.
Well, you work in the city, right?
Well, kind of outside it, but yeah, I just don't go into Manhattan much.
Well, when they open their gambling casinos in there, you can go in more regularly, right? You can,
or avoid it more than ever. I
mean. Or finance your space ventures that way.
Yeah, there we go. Paul Conjursi and I used to joke about that. Yeah, we're all in Vegas, you know, they're rolling the dice. Papa needs a new rocket. Come on.
Yeah. Yes, you know, when they had those Space Frontier Foundation meetings in Las Vegas, they were really, really fun. I miss that a lot.
Yeah, but they were in July.
It was very, very hot, but the hotel was air-conditioned. But I remember we'd go out at night on the Strip, and, my God, it was like walking into a blast furnace.
It was unbelievable,
but there were just thousands of people on the street. This is back when the economy was good, and people had money in their pockets to spend at the tables and on entertainment and shows and some of those lavish restaurants. It was really a fun time. And those space conferences, listeners, if you've never been to a space conference, you're really missing out on a lot of joy and a lot of fun and a lot of great people. They're really, really, I don't know, I'd rate them at a 10 plus, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, they're the most fun you can have in a public place. if I was, like, independently wealthy, I think I would go to a lot more of them.
I would, too. I'd just go from one
right
to the
next. I limit myself to 3 a year. I'd love to do more.
I agree with you. They are just loads and loads and loads of fun with great people and lots of camaraderie and often a pretty good agenda where you learn a lot of stuff. So
yeah, and you get a lot of good ideas going forward. You just pump up the energy with other people and you find people to network with and do some business.
Well, so let's talk about that for a minute before we end the show. Conferences in 2011 compared to other years. I don't notice a letdown. I don't notice a shrinking of the conference community. It's holding its own and its interest.
It's holding its own because first they're getting more respect.
there we go again, right?
they're getting more respect. I mean, first and foremost, I mean the conference guys. It is an advocacy community, and some of this advocacy after all these years is finally starting to pay off in terms of policy changes. And so all of a sudden, you're seeing more people show up at these conferences, and there's a lot more juice out there. So, which makes it even more fun because it means people are really taking it seriously, and people not only who make policy decisions and in those circles, but also people with money.
Well, and another thing I notice, and listeners, don't take this wrong. Lots more women and lots more minorities. No, I'm serious.
Yeah.
It's much more of a reflection of society as a whole rather than just a bunch of old senior white dudes.
It is
really changing. And,
but mostly, not even that, but mostly is the relative youthfulness.
Very, yeah.
Young people have really picked up on this. I mean, I think the future of faith advocacy is assured now. I was worried there for a while, but the young folks have really caught on, and they're really in with both feet, and they're full of energy, and they love to get the job done. I got a chance, a little taste. They do something in Boulder every year called Space Vision, which is basically a student conference. And I was tapped to be a judge of their. They have a student business plan competition. I was one of the judges on it, and I just got a little taste of what that conference is like, and it was a lot of fun.
Absolutely, and the backgrounds I'm seeing are engineering of all kinds and business. There's a lot of business students and a lot of social sciences, political science students. So it is a mixture, and it is really different today than it was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. What should we have talked about that we have forgotten or I've forgotten to bring up or you've forgotten or we've omitted?
Well, I don't know because I've asked people to tell me that, and I never heard back from most of them. So, pretty much the stuff that I touched on, I have my little punch list here that we went over. I've pretty much covered everything that I thought was important. I was just expecting, your friends and listeners to fill in the blanks. I'm sure there's a lot of things we're missing out on. You couldn't possibly pack it all into a 2-hour show. But
I don't know. I think we're pretty comprehensive for what has gone down without the intricacies. I was trying to think if we did a little segment like they do on the Academy Awards, who is notable in space that passed away during the year. But
I need a little more advance warning.
But I don't know. I mean, I think we did lose some key people, some older people that were involved, you know, in the Apollo effort and stuff like that. I think in the future we need to pay our respects to them, and I just don't remember who some of them are. I do know that a good friend of mine at NASA Ames, and that many of the listeners will know, he's been a guest on the show, had a big stroke a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. and is recovering, Lynn Baroff, and we wish Lynn and his family all the success in recovering. He's a young man, and hopefully he will get back into full swing with rehab and whatever you do for stroke recovery, and our prayers and thoughts are with him. But I know we lost some seniors that had previous Apollo and other kinds of experience, some of the old timers. Next year we need to look at milestones for 2011, for 2012, and who
we
checks out
shall.
And who checks out during the year. I mean, that
and
would be
for my
condition.
Own self. Coming up again, I will be speaking on Friday, January 20th, for our Canadian friends. I'll be at Convocation Hall at the University of Toronto for the as a guest of the Astronomy and Space Exploration Society on their 9th annual Expanding Canada's Frontiers Symposium. It's like a TED Talk, and so I got 45 minutes to wow the crowd.
What are you going to talk about?
Well, the theme is the Space Exploration 2.0, What's Next? And it's me, Mark Millis, who's the former head of NASA Breakthrough Propulsion Physics.
Yeah, he's a good friend. He's been on the show many, many times.
And Nicole Buckley, who's from the Canadian Space Agency, who's the chief scientist for ISS and life sciences. So it's going to be an interesting mix. I'm going to be talking about business development and investment and things of that nature.
Mark has the Tall Zero Foundation. And he has a terrific book he co-edited with Eric Davis called Breakthrough Propulsion.
Yeah.
And he's really a sharp dude.
So I'm doing that. So if you're in the Toronto area or you're a student at the University of Toronto, consider that. I'll be out there. I'll probably be speaking again at ISDC next year, which is just over Memorial Day weekend in Washington, D.C. I'll be running the New Space Business Plan competition in July of next year.
So a busy year for you again.
It's a year for me again, absolutely.
Are you speaking in the business track at ISDC?
I presume so, yeah. We haven't really discussed it fully yet. I don't even know who's running it now. Chris McMurray ran it for so many years. He wanted to step aside. He actually tried to recruit me to run it, but I don't think I'm going to have the time with the other things I want to do.
Do you know what hotel it's being held at?
Not sure. I have to look it up. It's already set. I just don't know off the top of my head which one
okay.
it is. I'm sure somewhere near K Street.
All right. Well, do you have New Year's plans?
Just a couple of close friends and some, you know, immediate family members. As I told you before the show, my mom is in hospice. So we work around that as well.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. And
yeah.
We wish all of you, the very best and give my regards to Bev as well when you talk to
Absolutely.
Her after the show. And let's hope the dysfunction, gets curtailed during 2012. Although it's an election year, it might be even stronger than it was this year.
Yeah, all it takes is a few successes. I think if Elon can hit the leadoff run,
well, that should set the tone. I think
in February that could set the tone for the whole year and get everybody pumped up, and then it will be a topic in the debates.
Absolutely, and then if Orbital follows, that'll even be a better boost. The two of them together. So we will see. All right. Well, we will talk later. If you want to, when you get further along on the business plan programming, we can talk about doing a show about it. And
I'd love to do that.
Like we did this year and seeing how to do it. And I'm looking forward to boot camp again.
Absolutely.
So,
I'm glad to have you.
So,
you're my first recruit, by the way. So there you go.
Do what?
You're my first recruit.
I'm your first recruit.
Start again.
That precludes me from writing a business plan, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to write a fun business plan and submit it. See if I could put my mouth where my money is and win something, especially $100,000. That's a better risk than trying for the lottery. Well, listen, Tom, have a good New Year. Thank you for your year in the review, and a Happy New Year to you, and I'm sure we'll be in touch as 2012 rolls around.
Absolutely, David. It's always a pleasure to be here. I just love having these conversations with you. So hope we get to do a few more next year.
Absolutely. And listeners, Friday morning, 9:30, Sarah Howard is our guest, a first-timer on the space show. And remember, she was one of the, I think, one of only two women engineers that worked on the Saturn V and on the Apollo mission. And she has a book about her experiences. She's really a character, and you'll really enjoy hearing what she has to say and have her tell you stories about what it was like building and working on the Saturn V and sending men to the moon. I wish we could send them again, but maybe someday. So, listeners, that's it. Thanks to Tom Olson and all of you who sent in email questions, and Terry who gave us a call. And again, Friday morning, 9:30 a.m. California time. Goodbye, all.